Emmy Award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hey everybody, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
And I'm Allison.
And this is a podcast where we ruin a horror movie for you every week without fail.
Without fail, we are here.
Constantly failing, and yet without fail.
We had begged you guys, because we are slaves to the algorithm, to leave us some good reviews on iTunes. And if you leave a spooky one, like, we'll read the spookiest ones, whatever your interpretation of spooky is, on the podcast. And boy, do we have one that I want to read, because I can't live with this reality just mine anymore. I need to share it. This review was from Jay Kayleen, who said the title of it is "Does Hallie Exist?"
Love it already.
The review says, "I like to imagine the podcast is just a nightmare of Allison Livey, where her best friend, in quotes, Hallie Kiefer, tortures her night after night with detailed yet hilarious breakdowns of horror movies. I predict the plot twist is there is no Hallie. It was all just a vivid dream, all in Allison's head."
Incredible. Absolute incredible twist.
Now I'm like, is that what's happening?
I was going to say, don't tell Allison, but that is true. This is actually what's happening. I do not exist. I'm actually Allison in a different voice, but she doesn't know she's doing both of us.
How would I know? How would I know that that's not reality? Like, there's no way for me to ever even find that out.
It would have to be like at the third act, you know, like someone's like, Allison, I recorded you recording the podcast. And then you look and it's just you running to different sides of a table or something.
Yeah, just me talking to my computer screen and just like doing both of our voices.
This is a perfect story. This is like better than, you know, like the baby shoes never worn. Shoes for sale never worn.
So much darker and better. Just an incredible spooky review.
Thank you so much, Jay Kayleen. And yes, if you leave us a 5-star review and write us a genuinely spooky review, and listen, we're starting out hot, so you got to measure up to this.
This is like the bar has been set.
We will happily read them. So thank you so much for that. Terrifying. Absolutely terrifying.
Terrifying. Terrifying. The general concept of like finding out someone isn't real or something is a dream. You know, we've done multiple movies where that's happened and it is always a scary thing.
Speaking of scary things, we are, October is for us witch month. We decided to pick
witch
a theme.
Month.
And the theme is witches. One, there's a lot of witch movies. Two, they're all different kinds. You know, you picture a witch with the hat, and that's just one kind of witch.
Yeah.
And this week we're doing not a totally different kind of witch, but certainly a spin on an old classic. It's a twist on an old classic. This, is 2013's The Conjuring.
Which was recommended, thank you, Christy recommended on Instagram and Caprine recommended on Twitter. Keep those recommendations coming. We will get to everything eventually. So thank you guys, and I'm excited for this one.
What is your? Do you have any familiarity with or knowledge about The Conjuring as a franchise, Allison?
I only know that it is a franchise. That
okay,
like
great.
It is, like that there are many. Like, I'm curious, and, like, maybe we can dig into, like, are all of the sequels and subsequent films related to the first, or is it kind of anthology style?
So, basically, the Conjuring franchise is built around a fictionalized version of two real people, Ed and Lorraine Warren. They are real paranormal investigators. Lorraine is still alive. Ed looks like he passed away in 2006. And they are people who their business was, well, it was the business of show, but what they were showing is, you know, haunted houses, possessions. Lorraine claimed to be a clairvoyant and a medium. Ed sort of pitched himself as this demonologist. And in 1952, the Warrens founded the New England Society for Psychic Research, the oldest ghost hunting group in New England.
Okay.
Written a million books, investigated a million famous hauntings, you know, Amityville Horror, you know, if that name rings any bells.
Yes.
They were out here in the streets doing the legwork. Now, what were all these things, complete hoaxes? I believe so. So that's where I'm coming from.
Right.
Another thing that they, the movie sort of emphasizes their good Christian nature.
Like that.
Which is an interesting take. You could look this up. At what point Ed moved a 15-year-old girl into their house and she was effectively their third, which, again, I'm not saying – if you have a third, that's fine. I don't think God judges. But when it comes to teenagers, I think that this is – you know, there's a lot of song and dance about the ghosts, and then at home, nothing good was going on.
Yeah.
But it's interesting the way that the franchises sort of solidify them as like this good Christian couple whose good, beautiful, heterosexual Christian love is partially what saves you from the ghost.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a lot
like that
to take in. And
okay.
They
okay.
also have, and I believe it's not operational right now, they do have sort of an occult museum that was in their home filled with artifacts and different sort of souvenirs from different hauntings. One of those souvenirs you've probably heard of is the very famous Annabelle, a haunted doll who has her own movie franchise that has spun off of The Conjuring.
Oh, so is Annabelle actually a Conjuring, like, splinter movie? Like, that, does it come from that? Or is it just, we know it, the reality, question mark, is that?
Well, she's in The Conjuring. She's in many of the movies I've seen. I don't think I've seen all the Annabelle movies. I did see Annabelle Origins, which I would argue don't, in fact, explain the origins of where Annabelle actually came from. But
that's
yes, Annabelle kicks off. Not only is she featured heavily, and she kicks off the Conjuring movie. So she's sort of their, she's their star. She's their Judy Garland. And so as a result, you could put her in other movies and she can carry them.
Okay.
And this is directed by James Wan and written by Ched Hayes and Carrie W. Hayes.
Wait, not Chet Hayes, not Tom Hanks's anti-vax white boy summer son.
No, this is Chad Hayes.
Oh, Chad Hayes. Wow, those names are basically the same.
They are the same, but I would argue that they are, in fact, spelled or pronounced differently. But, you know,
yes.
Thank you for keeping me on my toes. And we always like to have Allison watch the trailer. And what were your thoughts about the Conjuring trailer?
I mean, spooky.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely spooky.
Okay.
Love Vera Farmiga? Now I'm forgetting what her last name is. But she's great.
Yes.
Like, she's like, she really is good at, like, acting horrified. Like,
yes.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I will say, and Patrick Wilson plays Ed Warren.
Yes.
Both of them are absolute babes, and both of them giving 110%. Like, these are the kind of movies where they are elevated by good actors, and they are committed, and they are in there, and they are the Warrens. And I really appreciate that about this movie.
Yeah. You know, the general, like, based on true story stuff is always very scary, but then I'm like, how much of this is a true story, in quotes?
Right. This, again, a lot of it's up for debate. I think the Warrens very much sold the idea that a lot of this is true. Again, do I think it's true? No. I there's a TikTok going around right now where I think it's like a guy saying, ghosts can't hurt you. And we know this because if they could, there would only be about a handful of Caucasian people left in the world. And that's sort of how I agree. It's like, if ghosts could really do this, we'd all be, like, then the world would be absolute mayhem all the time. Because it's not just, like, one out of a billion ghosts, you know what I mean?
Right. It wouldn't be, like, this friend of a friend of a friend heard a thing about a story. Like, it would be happening constantly. Like, that would be a regular occurrence of, like, oh, more ghost violence. So,
yeah.
That's how I think we know there aren't ghosts.
I completely agree. Now, we do like to take a baseline scary. And I guess for me, Allison, the question is, how scary do you find the concept of being too poor to move out of a haunted house?
Oh, very, 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 very scary. Being trapped by money is, I find financial, I talked to my accountant yesterday and I cried. Like, I find finances so scary. to then have, you know, your financial struggles trap you in a house with a ghost, that's even worse. That's like worst case scenario.
Yeah, and I feel like so many haunted house movies, like, you're like at a certain point like, okay, why don't you just leave? And they do a great job of this, of being like, this is the early 70s. Mm-hmm. We have a bunch of kids.
Oh, is this whole movie set in the 70s?
Yes, it is a period piece. Okay. You know, my husband works. I stay home. I am pregnant with our sixth child. Like, where do you think we're going to go? All of our money went into buying this house. And to me, that's the most compelling reason. Like, yeah, where the fuck would you go? Where do you take all those kids?
Right.
You know? And so that's underpinning a lot of what's going on. It's like they simply can't afford to leave. They can't go anywhere. And that's, of course, because it's more realistic, more terrifying.
Yes.
And then finally, before we kick things off, Allison, do you want to guess the twist in The Conjuring?
Guess the twist.
I'm going to guess that the witch, ghost, whatever is haunting this house has a tie to this specific family.
Okay. Give me a little more. Push it.
Like
push
maybe.
It, push it a little further.
Maybe an ancestor of of the people who live in this house has wronged the dead.
Great. Love
in
it.
In some way. So kind of an unfinished business vibes.
Yeah. And that's another thing about ghosts is like, oh, they have unfinished business. Baby, everyone who has ever died up until about 4 years ago and also continue today has unfinished business. I don't know what you think the history of the world is, but it's not like people tidily wrapping things up and then dying of gangrene at 34. You know what I mean? Like, history is full of people with business whose net will never be finished.
Yeah, exactly. Where does this take place?
We're in New England.
Okay.
They're in Harrisville, Rhode Island. And we're kicking things off in 1971. And, but let us begin. We are ruining The Conjuring. And we're actually going to take it to a slightly different direction because the movie does not start with the main haunting, which I think is a fun, you know, sort of diversion. So we meet two roommates, Debbie and Camilla, and Rick, who I'm assuming is one of their boyfriends. It's unclear. And they are meeting with Ed and Lorraine Warren to tell them about their unfortunate house guest, Annabelle. And this is where we first find out about Annabelle. And they tell them, well, we had this doll, and it was sort of like moving a little bit around the apartment, but in a way that we found very intriguing. Couldn't be me. Also, Annabelle the doll looks terrifying. If you haven't seen her, please Google her, just her face alone. No child would want that doll.
I'll say this. Most dolls are scary, and old dolls are especially scary.
And an old doll moving around on its own,
Oh, well,
that's
the
trifecta.
Game over.
And they're talking to the Warrens, and the Warrens like, oh, okay, you know, like, taking notes. And they say, okay, and we may have done something we shouldn't have done. We went to a medium, and the medium said there was a spirit of a 7-year-old girl who died in our apartment, Annabelle, who was just lonely and was just playing with the doll. And so, well, we gave her permission to enter the doll. And the Warrens are like, you did what?
No.
Why would you do that? And they're like, well, that being said, we did it. And in the middle of the night, they wake up. Oh, they come home one day. That's what it was. They come home one day and Annabelle's in the middle of the hallway. And when they went to go put her, I guess, back in her own bedroom. I mean, I understand there's two people here, but like how many rooms does this apartment have? They walk in and Annabelle has fucking trashed the place. She's smashed picture frames. She's drawn in a red marker on the ceiling, torn up all this shit.
How did she even get up there?
I don't know. And where'd she get the markers?
No, I don't like that at all.
So the girls take Annabelle, as you would, and throw her in a dumpster outside. Allison,
smart.
In the middle of the night, there is a loud, aggressive banging on the front door.
No.
Terrifying if that's a human, even worse if it's a doll.
Yeah. Yeah, even if that's somebody who you want to see, that's not a fun experience to, you know, wake up in the middle of the night to banging on a front door.
They open the front door, Allison.
Oh, no.
Couldn't be me. And they find a little handwritten note that says, "Miss me?" Question mark. Because Annabelle has a sense of fun. She has a sense of play about her.
Oh, my God.
And suddenly they hear the pounding from inside an internal door, like a closet. That's where the pounding is coming from. And they open the door. They sort of gasp in horror. Spoiler alert, it was Annabelle.
And of course.
Warren says, okay, well, you shouldn't have invited the entity into the doll because that, whatever that was, it wasn't human. that's a demonic entity or an inhuman entity. You like no, yes. a child that died, you wouldn't be able to like put it into an object. You basically said, yes, unknown, inhuman entity, go ahead and go inside this doll. And then it would basically be using, like you get to the airport early and you sort of have a drink. Annabelle is the airport Chili's before she tries to get into a human body.
Oh, sure.
So she was just having a little fun with you before she possessed one of you. So it's actually really good that you came to us so we could lock Annabelle's ass up. And they have Annabelle. They put Annabelle in. They sort of are at home occult museum. So they have all these artifacts from all these different cases they've worked on.
Okay.
And what we realize is this story they're telling is actually a lecture they're giving at a college. And so we sort of like, oh, now we're in a lecture room and Anne and Lorraine are wrapping up their story. And they're like, any questions? Everyone has a question about the story they told.
Could it have more questions? That is,
right.
That is
who, what, where,
questions
how.
Abound. Yeah.
One question they call on someone and they say, what do people call you? And Ed says, well, you know, I have been called a demonologist, ghost hunters. And Lorraine says, kooks. It's like, well, yeah, in real life, absolutely.
Because that's not a thing in reality. But in the movie world, sure.
And we get some text on the screen. I'm not going to read all of it because it's incredibly long. But Ed is the only non-ordained demonologist recognized by the Catholic Church. And Lorraine is a self-declared clairvoyant. And it promises us only one story is so malevolent, they have locked it away until now. And now we get into the movie. This is the story that's so malevolent. And we're meeting a family, the Perrones, and it's Roger and Carolyn and their five daughters, Allison.
No. That's too many. That's a horror movie, having that many children.
And Allison, Carolyn is pregnant, which means they're going to have a sixth, presumably daughter. I mean, like, the genetic lottery, maybe it could be a boy, but after five, it's going to be a girl.
It's going to be a girl.
Roger's bringing only girls to the table. We've got Andrea, the oldest, Nancy and Christine, Cindy and April. And all of them are like, Andrea's like a teen down to April, who's like four. So like not old enough to go to school yet. But they run the gamut. And I assumed, because of all the religious talk already, okay, so they're a Catholic family. They don't believe in birth control. Allison, later we find out they're not religious at all. I'm like, why the hell are you having six kids then?
No, that's just, no. That's too many kids.
If you have a religious inclination, okay, I can understand it. If you were just regular people having six kids, that I need like a prequel about that.
Especially if you don't have a lot of money, like
exactly.
If you're if things are already strapped, like stop having children.
So speaking of, they have bought a house and they're extremely excited. It's this big, rambling, old, beautiful house. It's in Rhode Island, and all of their money has gone to the house, but it's finally big enough for their gigantic and continuing to expand family. And they're moving in, and they're there with their dog, Sadie, who refuses to step inside their new home and is just barking and running around on the outside. So we already know a bad sign.
Something is wrong. Dogs always know.
And immediately they're moving things in April because she's young and can't really move boxes. She's outside playing, and she finds a music box near a tree outside. That night, the girls are all playing around. Their mom is, like, yelling at them, like, stop, you don't know the house. Like, please don't do this. But they always play a game called Clap and Seek, which is essentially a blindfolded game of hide and seek where the seeker is blindfolded and then the other people who are hiding have to clap to let her know where they are.
Okay.
So
terrifying. Most children's games are kind of scary.
Exactly. So they're playing in the house. It does look fun, again, if you didn't live in a house where you knew some fucked up was about to go down. As they go to bed, Roger and Carolyn are like, cannot get Sadie to come inside. So she's just running around barking in the yard. And Roger's like, don't worry, I tied her up. She can sleep on the porch. It's not too cold. But I don't know what we're going to do if she refuses to come in the house. And then, Allison, they have sex to christen the house. I'm like, you're telling me this couple who has five children, who just spent all day moving, and also one of them is pregnant, had the energy to have
Absolutely
sex?
Absolutely not. No.
That's more preposterous than a ghost, in my opinion. Absolutely.
That's absolutely insane. That's the most unbelievable thing probably that will happen in the entire film.
When Carolyn wakes up, she has a mysterious bruise on her leg. But she's thinking, hey, it was a big day and then we fucked. So, you know what I mean? I probably,
bruises
I just got banged up. Yeah. However, as they're walking around, we start to see the first inkling of some weird things. All of the clocks have stopped at exactly 3:07 a.m. It's freezing in the house. And the girls are complaining about a rotting meat smell. you know, and I grew up in a farmhouse. So my immediate thought is like, okay, there's like a dead animal on the wall. You know, like you got to figure this out. Meanwhile, while the girls are playing, they find a boarded up cellar door, which they did not know was there. And Rogers goes down and check it out, and it's full of, like, dusty old antiques, but, like, a ton of furniture and stuff. And so Rogers, like, we might be able to sell some of this stuff, like, if they just abandon it. He's also trying to get the furnace working because the furnace seems to be operating fine, but it's freezing in the house all the time. Right. So this is our first, you know, like, inklings that things are going not so great. Meanwhile, over at the Warren's house, which is, like, this, like, beautiful, idyllic, like, they have a chicken out in the yard, and, like, they have a little daughter named Judy. You know, they have, like, a really adorable little life as well. Except for in their house is an occult museum full of possessed and evil objects.
Right.
And a reporter has stopped by to, like, interview them, to ask about Annabelle, and sort of get, like, a scoop. And the reporter seems like a true believer. Like, he really believes all of this.
Yes.
And he says to them, this might be crazy, but, like, doesn't it seem dangerous to keep all this stuff in your house? Like, why wouldn't you just burn these
Excellent
objects?
Question. Right.
And Ed says, that's a good point. However, it would only destroy the vessel. Like, if we were to burn it, the entities attached to these objects, like these demonic entities, would just be released and find something or someone else to attach to. So it's safer for us to keep them in the house, arguably, considering what happens, both in this movie and in other movies. It's safe for us to just keep an eye on them. You know what I mean? Like, essentially, it's like an evil doll jail, you know? And there's, like, old, like, a suit of armor and all this stuff that has an evil force attached to it. I would not live in that house myself, but, you know, that's my opinion.
Even though even knowing that ghosts and spirits and things like that aren't real, I still don't want that in my house.
Agreed. And the reporter says, you know, actually, I was talking to your contact at the Catholic Church, Father Gordon, and he says that something happened during the last exorcism you did to your wife. And Ed brushes it off like, you know, it was fine. It wasn't a big deal. But that's our first inclination of, like, because she's a clairvoyant, Lorraine, when she takes part in these sort of exorcism or, like, rituals, it really psychically takes it out of her. Like, it's horrifying in a way that, like, everyone else, because they're not attuned to the spirits, are not necessarily affected.
Right.
Of course, Judy then sneaks into the occult museum, and he has to shoo her out, which is another problem. It's like, you have a kid under 10 in a house filled with evil objects, including an evil doll, which you know is able to move around of its own accord. And, it's a recipe for disaster, and it is later on in the franchise.
Oh, okay. Great. I was going to say, I'd be disappointed if at some point they didn't address just the general unsafe nature of living in that house.
Oh, definitely. Back at the Perrone's house, it's the middle of the night again. The clocks have stopped again at 3:07. And one of the daughters, Christine, sort of wakes up and she's yelling at her sister Nancy, like, stop pulling on my foot and stop farting. It smells so bad in here. And they're both sort of half asleep, and Nancy's like, I'm not touching your foot. And we see something is sort of dragging Christine to the end of the bed. She wakes up, though. Everything's fine. You know, so she's assuming, okay, maybe I had, like, a dream. Meanwhile, Roger has fallen asleep at his desk, and he wakes up to the sound of thumping throughout the house. And he looks, and the cellar door is now ajar of its own accord.
No.
So he's sort of looking. It sounds like someone's walking around the house. And he finally finds his oldest daughter, Andrea, is on the stairs. And she's like, Cindy is now sleepwalking again. A very common thing in a lot of horror movies, as we've discussed. In the movie Sinister, a child sleepwalking is one of the first harbingers of evil intent in the house. Cindy is not only sleepwalking, she is slamming her head while asleep onto a big old wooden wardrobe in Andrea's room that was there when they moved in. So she's just slamming her head.
Something particularly scary about people who are sleepwalking or possessed or whatever, like harming themselves. Like
absolutely.
Banging themselves into things, hitting themselves, hurting themselves. Like that's just like a next level horror thing.
And so, you know, Andrew's like, well, you always told me don't wake her up. And he's like, no, if she's doing this, go ahead and wake her up and we'll get her back to bed. So he kind of ushers Cindy back to bed. In the morning, Carolyn has a second, even gnarlier bruise on her back, which she doesn't even notice, but that she and Roger are getting ready together in the bathroom. He's like, oh my God, like, what happened? Like, this is, it looks way worse than like, oh, this was an accidental sex or moving related bruise. Like, this is something is wrong. He's like, I think you need to see a doctor, especially because she's pregnant, you know? So it's like, if something's going on, you know, the doctor will be able to talk to you about it. And they're worried about Cindy, but again, there's a lot of things going on. You know, Roger's leaving for work, and as he does, he finds a dying bird next to the house, and he realized the bird must have slammed into the window and broken its neck. The four oldest girls, they're school-aged, and so they go off to school, and April's the only one who stays home. Literally,
April's
immediately.
The youngest one.
Yes, yeah, and she's adorable. So I'm like four or five, so like not old enough for kindergarten yet, or I guess if they have kindergarten back, I don't even know like when.
If they
now
had school.
We have it, and now we have preschool. But I don't know. Maybe we're going until a little bit later. But she's playing by herself, and she immediately starts talking to a new invisible friend named Rory. And she's sort of talking to herself, and Carolyn comes in like, "Oh, you know, what are you doing?" And she's like, "Oh, I met my new friend Rory, and he, you know, he's playing with me." And he says, "If you use this music box, the music box that she found near the tree outside, you could see him in it." And so Carolyn sits down, and we hear the creepy off note music, and she stares into a spinning mirror, and suddenly a figure appears behind her, but it's just April. It's fine.
Okay.
And April says, "Let's play a game of hide and clap." And so they play a game. If I'm Carolyn, I'm like, I am exhausted. I am pregnant. We just moved in. If you're playing with a ghost, that's fine. But I got stuff I need to do. I need to lay down.
I need to lie down. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
But because Carolyn's a good mother, she's like, okay, we'll play one game. And so, of course, Caroline is blindfolded. April runs off to hide. And they have the clap. So she says, first clap. And we hear April clap little hands. And Carolyn makes her way through the house by the sounds of the claps. And she ends up in Andrea's room. And we can see, because we're not blindfolded, Allison, that the wardrobe doors open on their own. And from inside the wardrobe, we hear a clap. And we even see two tiny, pale little hands come from inside and clap.
Oh, no.
So Carolyn's thinking, I know where you are. You're hiding in that wardrobe. But when she goes over there, she takes off her blindfold. And April appears in the door and says, you were so cold. I was in the other room. I wasn't in the wardrobe. And that's Carolyn's first indication of like,
something's amiss.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's not just that it's cold. It's not just that there's something's dead in the walls. It's not just that the clocks keep malfunctioning. I definitely heard a child playing and clapping inside this wardrobe that does not exist. Also, this is when we find out what Roger's job is. And this is one of the hardest jobs, and also would be the hardest job, knowing that your spouse would have to be alone to take care of your five going on six
five
daughters.
Children. Yes.
Roger is a long haul trucker.
Okay.
Which that sucks. And that's the very 70s. The 70s was all about trucking. Roger has to go down to Florida, which means he's going to be gone for a full week, leaving Carolyn and the girls alone to take care of business. And Carolyn's used to it. And she's like,
even without the ghost, that's
I know.
A
it'd be
terribly
week. Difficult. And if you're listening to this in a truck, if you are a trucker, my sympathies and respect go out to you because that seems like an incredibly difficult job to do.
So hard.
And he's like, well, I have to take every job I'm offered because we just bought this house and also we have these growing kids. You know, like I can't be turning down work. And Carolyn's like, of course not. We have to feed these kids. You go. We're going to be fine. It'll be very difficult. That night, Christine wakes up again and yells at Nancy, like, stop touching my feet. Please stop ripping ass all night. It's horrible. Nancy is, of course, dead asleep. And Christine feels herself, like, violently yanked to the end of the bed. And she's definitely awake. So this is for Christine's first, realization. Like, something is really fucked up. This isn't, like, a dream or whatever. And she wakes up and she screams for Nancy. And Nancy wakes up, like, what's wrong? And Christine is staring behind the door, which is ajar. And she said,
there's someone standing over there.
I don't see anyone.
It's looking right at us.
And Nancy gets up and sort of is trying to look in the shadow but doesn't see anything. Suddenly the door slams shut and both the girls scream. Roger and Carolyn run in like, what's going on? Christine is panicking. She's like, I saw someone behind the door. I know they were there. They were staying right next to Nancy. And even Nancy's like, I didn't see anyone. Like, I don't think that was going on. It was probably just a dream. And Christine said, no, the thing talked to me.
No.
It says it wants my family dead. Allison, here's my question for you. If this was you, what would you do?
What would you do?
We're moving.
But
I mean, okay, first
where?
Of all, I would kill myself.
Yes. Okay. yes. We all know
the
what you do.
Special. What Plan I really do B. is kill myself.
Yeah.
Plan B. I'm get like at least like I'm getting up and we're like we're not staying there. Me and the girls. If I'm the mother, like we're going. I'm taking whatever money we have and I'm finding a hotel or a motel or something.
Yeah.
And we are staying there until. I don't know. I like there seems to be no solution. I'm like get,
exactly.
Like, who sold this house to them? Like, what inspections can be right. done to maybe reconcile this?
And to be fair, I did, according to the Amazon, like, trivia, you know, in Rhode Island, they do not have to tell you about hauntings. Now, in real life, that is because they're not real. But
right.
in the movie, that would have been really helpful to know if they had had the history. And we'll find out more yes. of the history in a minute here. But I agree. They have no information. And the thing is, like, even if they stay in a hotel— Again, they are five going on six kids and the parents. The dad's the only one working. Even if long-haul trucking pays well, which it might have done at this time.
Sure.
Their options are limited. There's no place that – and I even say that, like, no one's going to take us indefinitely. And that's what we need. We don't need a day or a week. We need a new home, right. and we simply do not have the resources for that at this juncture.
Burn the house down for the insurance.
Yeah, burn that's the house down. I'd say sleep in the truck if you had to, you know, like yeah. – But yeah, if you have to send your kids to go live with some relatives or friends, I would do it.
Figure it out.
Get the kids at least out of the house.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of six live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I need the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Over at the Warrens, they're meanwhile having a great time. They're playing with their chicken, Winston, you know. And, you know, they're having the time of their life. Ed is trying to sort of take on cases without Lorraine because he's still afraid that Lorraine is still hasn't recovered from this exorcism. And this is in the way where I'm like, well, this is what, like, a Catholic couple would be like. They're not really having an honest conversation about, right. like, what they should be doing, what Lorraine's comfortable with doing. So he's trying to prevent her from taking cases. And Lorraine's like, I am half of this. Like, this is why we're yes. together. Like,
yes.
this is not an accident we found each other, in her opinion. It's like, this is okay. what we're supposed to be doing. You can't just be going off and not telling me you're, like, helping couples, you know, with new cases. And he says, okay, good. Well, then let's go talk to this other couple. Father Gordon referred them to us. And Ed and Lorraine meet with a couple named Lee and David. But luckily, they find out their house is not haunted. It's just their pipes are all fucked up.
All right, that's another horror.
Yeah, which is another fucking homeowning nightmare.
Expensive, yeah.
Right, it's like, I'd rather find out there's a ghost in your house than you have to redo all the plumbing and
yeah,
water
yeah,
pipes.
Yeah, that's to have to overhaul your septic system. And
right, yeah.
No. yeah. sounds terrible.
And they're like, oh yeah, like the way it's set up, like it's causing all this groaning and like the water rushing through and it's like freezing. Like all things that make sense. And it makes you think, okay, well, Ed and Lorraine are above board because they could have easily said, it's haunted, you pay us, you know, we'll get rid of the ghost. But they said, no, it's fine. Meanwhile, unfortunately, back at the Perrones, Carolyn has a new huge bruise on her arm. And we see it's been a little while. And so she has iron tablets from her doctor. She went to the doctor, not knowing about ghosts, presumed, okay, she's pregnant. This is just, she has anemia. So we'll just put her on some pills and this will cure the problem.
More doctors should be thinking, like, is there a ghost in your house?
Absolutely.
Before I prescribe you drugs, let's just do a little ghost check.
Yeah, it should definitely be like, oh, do you have a family history of diabetes? Does there seem to right. be a haunting going on in your
yes.
new home?
Yes, just a thorough medical exam.
As Carolyn gets ready for bed, she's doing laundry and she hears clapping in the hallway. And she's like, girls, you have to go to sleep. Like, this has been a tough week.
Oh, no.
Your father's in Florida driving a truck. Like, let's all go to bed, you know? And so she's trying to walk around the house, trying to figure out who's clapping and who's playing clap and seek. Suddenly, with a huge crash, all of the family photos fall off the wall over the staircase and just smash onto the stairs all at once. And so Caroline's obviously terrified, but she's also like, is someone in the house? Did somebody just do that? And so she's running around the house, hearing what sounds like somebody walking or doors opening. And she's panicking, of course, because she has five daughters and she's alone and pregnant. And they live in the middle of fucking nowhere. And her husband's at home.
So I mean, of course, it's the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You don't see within your eye shot, or what do you call it, as the crow flies. And neighbors. So it's not like, oh, a suburban house you could run across the street or something.
This is rural. There.
Exactly. Yeah. Again, gorgeous. Would love to live there. A true fantasy. As she's running around, she hears like somebody breathing, like really loud, audible breathing. And suddenly the door to the basement swings open. And she goes and she peers in and she says, whoever's down there, I am locking you in. Just then the door swings shut, knocks her down the fucking stairs. She's pregnant, as I to remember. So the whole time I'm like, oh my God, she's going to miscarry. Knocks her down the stairs into the basement. She's panicking and she sees a ball roll across the floor of its own accord. And then the light bulb explodes. And she runs back up the stairs. It's, of course, locked. And she's pounding. But she's like a floor below her kids. So if they're not awake, they can't hear her. And she's screaming and pounding. And suddenly we hear a voice saying, want to play hide and clap?
No.
And then two little hands emerge from behind her face and clap. And she drops the match that she's holding because the light bulb is, of course, exploded. Right. So she's screaming in the basement, pounding on the door, and then suddenly goes silent. Simultaneously, Andrea wakes up in her bedroom and Cindy's back and she's pounding her head against the wardrobe again. And Andrea's like, okay, let's knock this off. And has put Cindy in her bed and be like, you could sleep in here tonight. Allison, even though she puts Cindy in the bed, she still hears the pounding on the wardrobe and she realizes the pounding is coming from inside the wardrobe. Something is slamming against the inside of the wardrobe. So she walks over and she opens the door, obviously terrified, as Cindy sits bolt upright in bed, terrifyingly, and screams. They both look up and crouched on top of the wardrobe is a woman in an old-timey white nightgown with, like, a rotten, dark, screaming mouth.
Ugh.
Luckily, just at this moment, and she leaps off the wardrobe at Andrea. Luckily, things have timed out perfectly. Roger is just getting back in his truck. So Roger's like, la-da-dee, la-da-da, literally from outside in the lawn, hearing his wife and two of his daughters screaming and screaming. So you can only imagine what he thought. He runs inside, and sort of by the time he gets inside, things seem normal, you know? And he's not downplaying this. Like, Roger's very much, like, attuned to what's going on. So he's not like, oh, get over. But luckily, the woman is not there, and his wife is able to get out of the basement. But things, we all know, and that Roger and Carolyn admit, things have gone from bad to worse. Luckily, the Warrens are lecturing not too far away, apparently. So they're giving a lecture, and they're talking about the last exorcism they did of this guy named Maurice. This is where Lorraine sort of experienced this trauma that is lingering that Ed is concerned about. And they said, like, this guy Maurice, he had, like, a horrible life. He was molested by his dad. And then, like, they have video of his exorcism. His eyes are, he's, like, crying blood. There's, like, an upside-down cross in his skin, like, emerging from the inside.
No.
I have to, there should be a rule, like, if you're molested by your parent, you should not then have to be possessed by a demon. Like,
shouldn't it's have. It's like, enough is enough.
Exactly. For God's sake, give him a break.
Just, give the guy, like, if you're a demon that's looking for a body to possess, like, maybe somebody that's not already suffering through incredible trauma.
Yeah, like, and then literally a
one
student,
thing at a time.
The student raised his hand. It's like, so what happens? Like, oh, well, the exorcism actually didn't work. He was beyond saving. So Maurice shot his wife. Luckily, she didn't die. And then he shot himself and he died. And it's like, so wasn't even a successful exorcism. Like, they got to him too late, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
And, also, like, what class is this? Like, what the fuck? Who
were they teaching? I do have a lot of questions about, like, the educational element of what these two do. Like, who, like, I can't think of a class I would take where they'd be like, and now our guest speakers, Ed and Lorraine Warren, are going to talk to you about failed exorcisms they've done.
Yeah, like, about a little doll they know who you can ever walk around on her own. Well, whatever they do, however, teach three important things that are going to come up here for us in this story, which is the three stages of demonic possession. So it's infestation. Okay. That's where you first start to see, like, little tiny hints, like we've seen in the Perrone house. oppression, mm-hmm. sort of the force begins to, like, focus on one of the family or one of the people living in the home. And then finally, possession. The demonic force, the entity will take over a person. In the audience, Caroline is watching because I guess she's auditing. I don't know. Again, I don't know.
Sure.
Maybe you just buy a ticket or something. Like, maybe it's an event they have on campus. And she looks horrified because Caroline knows enough to be like, oh, fuck. That's what's going on in my house. Afterwards, their assistant, Drew, who I love and is in the other movies and doesn't get enough airtime. Drew should have more lines. Brings Caroline to them and is like, oh, she has, you know, Caroline, go ahead and tell them. And Caroline, like, sort of, like, unloads of what's going on in her house. And she's like, I'm terrified, and begs them to come take a look. And they're like, don't worry. Most of the hauntings we see, there's, like, a perfectly reasonable explanation. It's not ghosts. Or it's not demonic possession. And Caroline's like, yeah, I don't think that's going to be the case here. But okay, come on by. And they do, because that's how they make the money. That's how they, you know, that's how they make their name for themselves. As soon as Ed and Lorraine show up to the Perrone house, Lorraine has this, like, look of absolute dread, like, oh, fuck. Like, she could tell right off the bat there's something going on.
And something's here, yeah.
And so Ed and Lorraine are like, okay, it has all the hallmarks, like freezing, a rotten smell that drifts through the house. Yeah. Like, the clocks keep stopping at the exact same time. They also notice Carolyn's bruises, which she says, oh, it's this iron thing. They're, of course, like, nah, it's not. It's not an iron thing.
No, you're not anemic, girl. You're getting beat up by a ghost.
Exactly. And they, the entire family is sleeping in the living room together. And they're like, one, it makes the girls feel safer. And two, is a little bit warmer because it's constantly freezing in this house.
Sure.
And so they go down to the cellar and Lorraine says, something awful happened here. And they're like, yeah, no shit, obviously. And so finally, Ed and Lorraine, they sit down and they record all of their interviews, which Ed and Lorraine Warren did in real life, too. Like, they, you know, sort of cataloging real-world evidence of hauntings and stuff was, like, very important to them. And so they're interviewing Roger and Carolyn. They say, well, why haven't you moved out? And Roger and Carolyn are like, bitch, do you see how many kids we have? We're about to have another kid. It is the early 70s. Like, there aren't, like, safety nets, like, right now. Like, we don't have family. We don't live near anyone. Even if we were to go stay at a hotel, this is our house. Like, we have to come back here. We don't have anywhere else to go, which I think is the most terrifying element. It's like, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, this is it. You're stuck here.
Yeah, like, the fantasy of moving into a haunted house is it's a fantasy of the bourgeoisie. You know what I mean? Like, the idea, like, oh, I'll just move out of my house. Well, I could never even afford a house. The idea of if I bought a house, I would never be able to leave it. I can't imagine.
No, you're already upside down on it.
Yeah. So Ed is recording his interview with Roger and Carolyn, and Lorraine is interviewing April. And April's telling her all about Rory. And it's like, okay, Rory is her invisible friend. Lorraine immediately is like, Rory's a ghost that lives in this house, too.
Mm-hmm.
And she looks into the music box, and unlike Carolyn, Lorraine does see Rory's spooky ass, and he looks like a little old-timey, like, Victorian boy. So he doesn't do anything too terrifying, but he does appear in a glimpse. And Lorraine, because she's sensitive to it, it's like, okay, so there's definitely at least one spirit here, but he's not the issue. Like, he's here, but that's not what this evil force is that I can sense.
Okay. He's just an ancillary ghost.
Yes. He is, unfortunately,
kind of a friend of
a friend of a friend, friend of the house, friend of the haunted house.
Lorraine, friend of the house.
Lorraine walks to the end of the property, which is where the big house where April found the music box, and it abuts against a pond. It's gorgeous. I mean, like, again, would love to live there.
Of course, idyllic.
And Ed joins her, is like, are you okay? And Lorraine turns around looking horrified because Ed cannot see what she sees, which is there is a dead body of a ghost woman hanging from the tree. And we see her feet dangling next to Ed's head. He's not even aware of it. But Lorraine is getting more and more information. So they start to press Roger and Carolyn, like, do you know anything about the house? They're like, no, we actually got it at a bank auction. Like, we were able to get it really cheap. And as a result, we didn't really get any information about the history of the house. And Lorraine are like, okay, we think that this house needs an exorcism. However, in order to get that from the Catholic Church, you have to, like, document all this evidence and present it. So we're going to bring Drew, we're going to bring our crew, we're going to bring our ghost cameras and our ghost photography and catalog what's going on. Then we should be able to submit it to Father Gordon and then get an approval and he'll do an exorcism and then we should be good to go. But we're going to have to come in and really, like, we need to have this stuff happen on camera. Like, we need to actually see stuff happen or else it's your word against ostensibly the Vatican.
Great.
And meanwhile, Carolyn and Roger are like, this has been going on so long. It's like, you have to do a whole fucking investigation, you know? Like, we've been living in this hell for at least weeks, you know?
Right.
And so they said,
How long is this going to take? How much paperwork and red tape do we have to get over?
Lorraine,
get rid of the ghosts.
Exactly. Lorraine informs them, actually, I realize that you can't just leave because the entity is attached to your family now.
No. I saw it first when I came through your door. It was latched to your back. And then I saw it again with the girls when we walked into the living room.
And she says, if you were to leave and go to a new house, that entity would go with you. So now that it's like sort of
it's not even real estate. Yeah.
Exactly. So you could go if you want, even if you could come up with the money. It won't resolve the issue.
Got it.
So, and they also say, okay, so we're going to start an investigation. And while we're at it, go get all your daughters baptized because none of them are baptized. Again, okay. It's all about the Christianity. It's all about the Catholicism of it all. At home, little Judy, she had gone to an estate sale with her Nana, so Lorraine's mother, and gotten two lockets. And so Judy gives her mother a locket with a photo that Nana has helped her put in there. And then Judy mm-hmm. has the same locket, but with a picture of Ed and Lorraine in it. And it's very sweet. Okay. And we know because we haven't seen Judy in a while that something bad's going to happen to Judy in a little bit here.
Yep.
When Ed goes to replay the interviews with the Perrones, he cannot hear Carolyn's voice, and neither can Lorraine. Carolyn's voice does not appear on the recording.
Oh.
So now they're like, okay, great. Between that and the bruising, it seems like this force is sort of attracted to and latching onto Carolyn.
Yes.
Of all of the people in the household. Otherwise, we would have been able to. Yeah, I know. My God. It's like, it is.
Like giving birth five times isn't enough. Like
moving when you're 6 months pregnant. Like my heart goes out to her. Yeah.
Yes.
So Lorraine, meanwhile, has done a lot of digging of her own. And she found out sort of what they believe to be the origin of the evil force in the house. And it is, of course, a witch. And her name is Bathsheba Sherman. She and her husband, Jedson, built the house in the 1630s. And so that's how old it is. And he was related to Marytown Esty, who was one of the witches tried at the witch trials and hung, which also I find a little dubious because we all know that the witch hunt was not real and innocent people were murdered. So now we're saying not only is this person a witch, but also is related to another witch, and we're saying that that's real. So that's like a complicated historical thing to get into.
Yes.
Unfortunately for poor Jedson, he and his wife have a baby, and a week later, he walks in on his wife Bathsheba sacrificing the child, as we know from the witch, to curry favor with Satan. And when she did it, he, obviously was horrified, and she went to the tree outside where we saw her ghost hanging, sacrificed herself, declaring her absolute loyalty to Satan, and was pronounced dead at 3:07 a.m. Now, I didn't know that they did exact time of dates hundreds of years ago, but
we had minutes then. Did we?
Right. Who's coming over to declare it? I guess her husband was there? The townsfolk? Yeah. I don't know. Unfortunately, as a result of this death, there have been a series of horrific, violent deaths, murders, suicides, and disappearances related to the house and the property, which has been since divided up for other houses because they owned like 200 acres. And even elsewhere in that property, people have been sort of punished for moving into this house. And they think, Bathsheba is the one who is sort of causing all this. Her spirit is still in the house. And unfortunately, all of her victims, like all the people who also died after her, Rory being one of them, presumably, a victim of a later, tragedy.
Violent
murder and death, are also trapped in the house. So we've got not only the source of the evil, but then her victims throughout all these past decades also trapped in the house. Again, which seems unfair.
Crowded.
But here we are. And now she is, because there's a new family in the house, has attached themselves to her and is going to ostensibly manipulate and possess Carolyn. To what end? Well, we know what Bathsheba loves best, killing kids. So that's the risk that's immediately on the table, is that if they can't figure out a way to get Bathsheba out of there, Carolyn is in danger, but also their children are in danger. So they got to go. And this is the part that I think of the movie that for me, I'm like, is the actual documenting of like, we have like video cameras that like go off when the temperature drops and we've got photography and we've got UV lights where you could see like handprints. Okay. I'm like, I don't care about any of that. Ghosts aren't real. And if they are real, I don't think you need to, I don't believe in a camera capturing them. I just don't.
No.
I don't think that makes any sense.
No, not at all.
It's not like a visual thing. If I can't see them, how are you recording it? Anywho, again, that's just my complaint with the Warrens in general. But they bring their assistant, Drew, and then their friend, a police officer named Brad, who is a skeptic. But they bring them along to collect evidence, and they kind of set up shop in the house. And Officer Brad has his gun sort of like for protection. Drew tells him, you know, you can't shoot ghosts, right? And I'm like, well, if you could photograph them and they could hurt you, I mean, in my mind, I'm like, you should be able to shoot ghosts.
Yeah, there's got to be something that you could, that some kind of
a ghost gun. I saw Ghostbusters. Yeah. They've got like ghost lasers or whatever.
Yeah, there's all kinds of ghost stuff.
And Lorraine tells Carolyn the story of Bathsheba. And Carolyn's like, who could kill a child? And Lorraine says, well, it wasn't really a child to her. It was just a way to elevate her status with Satan. You know, so that's, she had different priorities than motherhood. You, however, that's your number one thing.
Yes.
And Lorraine picks up a photo of the family, and we can't tell where they are, but she said, oh, this was a nice day at the beach. And of course, Carolyn's like, well, how did you know that's where we are? And Lorraine says she's, like, sensitive, so, like, if she picks up objects, she could see the story behind them. Okay. So she does see this really lovely time at the beach with the whole family, and it was sort of like, that's when they decided they were going to buy the house, and it was going to be like a fresh start where they'd have enough room and the girls could like grow up in this like ostensibly wholesome area, not knowing, of course, there was a infant murdering witch ghost that was going to be bothering them at the estate.
Again, that should be in a real estate listing.
And they kind of bond over being like mothers a little bit.
Yes.
And so we've got all our things set up, and Drew and Andrea, Drew, I guess, is in college, and Andrea's like, you know, like a senior in high school. So they have like a little flirtation, and he shows her like the black light, and suddenly they hear a door slam. But it's just Officer Chad taking a huge shit, so don't worry.
Oh,
it was just a fun fake out. That night, they're staying over. If the family goes to sleep, they're monitoring all their equipment. And Ed sets up like some religious icons, holy water, because it could sort of draw out an evil entity. Because they're sort of like, they hate that so much. So it kind of causes ghosts and so forth to act up. And Roger said, oh, like a vampire. And Ed says, yeah, except I don't believe in vampires. I think you should have to, if you believe in all this, I don't think vampires seem that outrageous.
No.
Am I wrong?
It seems, vampire seems more real than ghost in like on the gamut of spooky guys.
Right, it's a person. Like, it has a corporeal form.
Like, it's a person who drinks blood. Like, that exists, I think. Like, in the you know, in that very loose definition. But like, you can't cherry pick. It's not like the supernatural is not a la carte. If you believe in any of it, you should believe in all of it.
Werewolves, mummies.
Yeah.
Well, I guess mummies are real, regardless. But you know the kind of mummies I'm talking about.
Come back to life, mummies.
If you believe in Annabelle, you should definitely be vampires. Annabelle's essentially a vampire, but doesn't.
She's a doll.
Blood. She's a doll who's alive.
Yeah.
Anywho, that's neither here nor there. That night, you know, there's some spooky stuff. Some doors are slamming. The cellar door pops open, and Lorraine and Ed go down there. And Lorraine suddenly feels really sick. The door shuts of its own accord, but nothing too wacky. You know what I mean? So stuff where they're like, oh, we really need the goods. We can't just have some, like, clapping and doors opening. You know, the Vatican's not impressed by that kind of thing. And in the morning, they have, like, breakfast with the family. And it's actually really sweet. And the family feels, like, extremely reassured that someone's taking them seriously and is, like, actually helping them.
That's good.
And they say, you know, we could stay here and we'll actually Roger's going to take the kids to go get ice cream. And Carolyn is exhausted because, you know, it's hard enough being pregnant. And it's, like, she literally has not gotten a wink of sleep since they moved in.
No,
or, like, a whole night's sleep. So she's going to go lay down, and Ed and Lorraine offer to, like, help around the house just to, like, be of use to this family
do something.
They feel really bad for. So they go out to, like, do laundry, and Lorraine's hanging it up on the line. And they sort of have, like, a talk about Lorraine's experience during the exorcism. And she's like, I think you think that I'm, like, not as strong as I am. But, you know, they clearly love each other. And, again, they have a strong Christian love that no one could break asunder. And when Ed goes inside, the storm starts to roll in, and a sheet gets blown off the line. And when Lorraine turns to grab it, the sheet has blown against a figure of a human being. And then the sheet blows away and there's nobody there. Terrifying image. Love it.
That is truly chilling.
As she watches, the sheet gets blown against the second story window. And then when it gets pulled down again, there's a woman standing at the window that Lorraine can see. So she busts ass and she books it inside, being like, oh my God, the only person in the house is Carolyn. And we already kind of suspect that she's being targeted. Unbeknownst to her, Carolyn wakes up. You know, she has a huge handprint bruise on her hand. And she wakes up to have Bathsheba, the witch's face, inches from her face. And then she vomits what I think is blood, but it's like strands of blood. Like, it looks like gore into her mouth. Lorraine busts in.
Oh, God.
And Carolyn's awake.
Like baby bird style?
Yes. Vomits it into her mouth. And Carolyn brushes it off. And to be fair, Lorraine didn't see Bathsheba. She just saw someone at the window and was cued on to something horrible was happening. Carolyn's like, it's fine. I feel totally fine. Oh, Roger's back with the girls. So I got to go help them. So she seems to be willfully in denial about what's going happening now. Like, she can't engage with it to the point that maybe Bathsheba's got her claws in her, you know?
Yeah.
She's not
She's like
being
too nonchalant about it.
Exactly. So that's our, again, as the audience, our first tip off of like, okay, so this is, Bathsheba's plan seems to be working beautifully.
Yes.
Ed also agrees to help Roger with his, like, broken down car that he has. And during this, this is when he reveals, like, during Maurice's exorcism, the last exorcism they did, Lorraine saw something that scared her so bad she, like, locked herself in a room for 8 days. And he's never, he said, she hasn't told me what it was and I haven't asked her. Again, that's a Christian couple for you. You know what I mean?
That
like, somebody, if something scared Dave so badly that he locked himself in for 8 days, I would never stop asking him for the rest of our lives, so what was it? Could you draw it? Could you give me one word? Like, sounds like, what are you talking about? You live in a cult museum. I think radical transparency is the only way you two are going to make it through this.
Truly, there is no other option. You have to be constantly, you know, keeping each other abreast of what's going on.
It just seems unsafe, you know what I mean, if he doesn't know.
No, of course.
That night, the gang sets up for another ghost hunt, and Officer Brad hears a woman's voice outside, and he runs to the porch, but there's no one there. However, when he turns back to the kitchen, he sees a woman in a maid's outfit, and she has slit her wrist, and she holds her arms out to him, Sixth Sense style, and screams, "Look what she made me do!" And he's terrified, obviously, and, like, slams into the refrigerator. And everyone runs over to help him. He's like, I saw a ghost. Unfortunately, meanwhile, Cindy is sleepwalking in Andrea's room again. And they run up to go help her because they could hear her head hitting the wardrobe. But the door to the room is locked. And when they finally, they realize, oh, we can't get in the room, but we could hear in our equipment, they hear Rory's voice, the ghost, talking to her. When they get the door open, Cindy is gone. Allison, I have to ask you, who will survive?
Who will survive?
I mean, Ed and Lorraine, I think.
Mm-hmm. How about Carolyn and Roger? What do we think about them?
I think Carolyn's gone.
Okay.
Roger, I think... Maybe Roger survives and, like, everyone else dies. Like, maybe, like, he's the lone member of his family that makes it.
Oh, great. I love that.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.
Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because... I have the charcoal mask. Great, because why would I put that on my face when I could drop it in my sink? This is what I get for multitasking. Ugh, why is charcoal so sticky?
Hello?
Hey, Janice. I am so sorry. I thought I was on mute. No, we don't need to reschedule. I'll just stay off camera. Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed.
Luckily, they realize that Cindy's okay. She is just... gone into a crawl space, like there's a sliding door at the back of the wardrobe, and there's a crawl space in the house.
Okay.
And April informs them, oh, well, that's where Rory hides when he's scared. and Lorraine notices that there's a space in the dust in the crawl space that perfectly matches the music box.
Okay.
And while she's there, she sees a rope and she tugs it and she pulls the rope up out of the wall, essentially. And she, at the end, she finds a noose. Suddenly, the floor gives way and Lorraine falls from the second story into the fucking basement. To me, I'd be like, you're breaking a leg. But she falls through the wall.
If you survive.
Into the basement. And there, she's confronted by a female ghost who tells her, she made me do it. And we realize that this is one of the people who lived in the house that Bathsheba compelled to murder her child. And now this ghost is trapped in the basement too, saying, she made me do it. Trapped for all eternity. Again, doesn't seem fair. You should at least be told when you're signing the paperwork, when you get the deed, by the way, a ghost will possess you and make you kill your kid. And suddenly, Lorraine's necklace starts strangling her, the locket that Judy gave her. So she's being strangled alone in the basement while everyone's trying to run down there and help her.
God.
Things have gone from bad to worse. However, this interaction with this ghost allows Carolyn to understand, okay, this is what the plan is. This is why Carolyn has all the bruises. This is why, you know, all this stuff is happening. Bathsheba has attached herself to Carolyn. She's trying to possess Carolyn. And based on what we know, Carolyn's going to kill those kids. You know what I mean? If Bathsheba gets inside her. So we got to figure out, like, we don't have time, you know? Unfortunately, as she's having this revelation, a force picks up their daughter, Nancy, and starts kicking her ass, throwing her around the room, and everyone has to grab her. And this, while it is unfortunate, is the thing that the Warrens were like, this is evidence that we can get priests to approve an exorcism.
Yeah.
Like, we have enough.
Yeah, I more than enough.
After all this.
This is a wealth of evidence.
I agree.
If this is all real, this is, like...
Exactly.
You're good.
Meanwhile, like, Lorraine takes a break. She goes outside, and... she hears a children's voice calling her, and she looks in the water, and she sees her daughter Judy's body floating there. So she freaks out. She runs back inside and calls her mom at home, thinking it's an omen. But luckily, Judy is fine.
Right.
But she says, this is a sign from Bathsheba. She is showing me, like, if you keep up, your kid will end up dead. Like, if you try to interfere with my plan to ostensibly kill children throughout time to please Satan, who's just the worst. What a fucking dirtbag. You know, not even one kid is enough.
Yeah, like, come on, man.
So obviously she's terrified. And so they say, we take their evidence to Father Gordon. And Father Gordon has the audacity to be like, well, it's going to be tough. They're not baptized. They're not a Catholic family. Bitch, what? How dare you?
Yeah. Like,
so you're going to be like, oh, well, they're not going to... First of all, that's not my understanding of exorcism. I think anyone can get it.
No.
And two, even if that's true, don't they need double help? That's like a way to get them in the church. Say, we'll baptize you, we'll exorcise it. Then you can start coming every week. You know, we have donuts after Mass.
It's a recruitment tool, if anything.
Exactly. And he's like, well, you know, it's going to be tough. But so because of that, we're going to have to... The Vatican itself will have to sign off on it. And I believe in real life, the Vatican has to sign off on all exorcisms. I could be wrong about that. But they're like, it's going to be a hard pitch. And I'm like, that just seems unfair. You know, like, if anything, they need more help because they don't have religion in their house, you know. Bureaucracy, red tape, bullshit. Finally, the Perrones say, enough is enough. We are going to stay in a motel. It might not work, but we got to get out of the house, which is the right move.
Yeah.
So they all head to a motel.
Good. Finally.
And that night, the Lorraines are driving home. It's the middle of the storm. And Judy wakes up, and her locket is sort of spinning on its own on her nightstand. So her parents aren't home yet, but her Nana is asleep. So she's kind of walking around the house. And of course, because she's a child, she goes into the occult museum.
I mean, of course.
If you're like 9 and there's an occult museum in your house, you're fucking going
there.
You're
going in.
Every time your parents are home.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Even if you don't know it's haunted, there's a doll. You're going to go look at it.
Right.
Unfortunately, Allison, when she goes to look at the doll, it's not in its little glass cage.
No.
And it's not sitting on its little chair. Annabelle is loose in the Warren's house, which is, in my mind, why you can't have that shit in your house.
In your house. You want to put her in a museum, okay, I kind of get it as like a possessed doll jail or whatever, but like your house shouldn't be attached to it.
Exactly. At least have a separate building. Put it in like a lead-lined coffin and bury it 100 feet underground.
Yeah, Judy, that's like kind of the best case scenario.
Judy knows enough to be terrified, so she runs back to her room. And unfortunately, a woman, Bathsheba, is there rocking in a rocking chair and combing Annabelle's hair. And they're both faced away. And then the only one to turn and look at Judy is Annabelle, which is a very creepy image.
Oh, so scary.
And she starts screaming. The door closes and Nana wakes up. And when she goes to get, there's a lot of doors locking on their own, which is very dangerous.
I don't like that.
Nana runs over and tries to open the door. Can't get it open. Luckily, Ed and Lorraine get there just then and rush in. Ed is able to get the door open when the rocking chair is picked up by a force, an unseen force, and thrown across the room and explodes into a bunch of splinters, narrowly missing Judy. So Lorraine had this omen, something bad is going to happen to Judy. They arrive just in time to stop that from happening. But they know now Bathsheba is the one who, I guess, activated Annabelle, opened her glass cage. I'm not sure.
Sure.
So Judy's like, Annabelle's out. She's walking around. I saw a lady, you know, like trying to give her all the information. And Ed runs back into the occult museum and Annabelle's back in her case and everything looks fine. Obviously, things are not
fine. She's so sneaky.
She's so fucking
nothing is fine.
That dumb bitch. So as if that, you think, okay, what? That's a terrible night. Well, unfortunately, Roger arrives back at the motel and his remaining, how many? Three of his daughters run out and say, Mom took Christine and April and left with them. And Mom was acting extremely weird and didn't tell us where she was going. And she smelled like rotten meat.
Oh, no.
So we know Carolyn has, at this point, probably been fully possessed. And she's taking two of her daughters. Where else is she going? She's going back to the house to sacrifice them. Roger does the right thing and calls Ed and Lorraine and tells them,
Andrew was here and she said that Carolyn took off with Christine in April.
The girl said she smelled like rotten meat.
She possesses the mother to kill the child. That's what she does. Yep. She's taking them back to the house.
Ed and Lorraine put the pedal to the metal. They fucking head back over there with the gang, Drew and Officer Brad. And at first, Ed doesn't want to let Lorraine go. He's like, you've been through too much. And Lorraine's like, fuck you. Fuck that. Yeah. Like, we are a unit. There's no way we could do this without each other. You don't have to. I'm not weak in the way that you're thinking of it. Mm. And also, like, she's a clairvoyant. You need her. You know what I mean? Like, she has a superpower, essentially.
Yeah.
So they arrive at the house, and they go down to the basement, and just in time to stop Carolyn from stabbing Christine with a pair of scissors and killing her. And we realize that's why the basement is the locus of all of this bad, evil energy, is that Bathsheba killed her infant child in the basement.
In the basement.
So all of this is like, this is the eye of the storm, I suppose. Like, this is the where all of this has to go down. And luckily, they're able to, like, get the scissors out of her hand, and they're able to pin her down. But Carolyn is full on, like, full exorcist, like that double and triple, like, demon voice, screaming, writhing, and they cannot find April. So they're like, we have two priorities. One, we got to tie Carolyn down to a chair. And she keeps trying to bite them like she bites Officer Brad in the neck. And so they throw a sheet over her and tie her to a chair as she's like screaming and writhing. And then Drew sets off to try to find April, where they're hoping is just hiding, but they don't know where she is at this point. And they go to call Father Gordon, and he's going to try to make the trip, but he's too far away. Where, I don't know. But he is not able to
like
get there.
Rural areas, like you're never close.
Exactly. And so Ed says, all right, I'm going to try to do the exorcism myself. And Roger is like, did you tell me this whole time you couldn't do it yourself? Like, you had to get the priest. And they're like, there isn't enough time, Roger. We got to do an exorcism right now, which they do. So he's not wrong. Okay. But he's like, you know that stuff that we tried to set up the entire movie? Forget about it. I'm going to do it myself.
Yeah. Oh, good.
I don't need to be such a goddamn priest. And Lorraine says, I'm going to stay despite what happened that last time. We're going to figure this out. And Ed begins the exorcism, and Carolyn's, like, shaking the entire house. Like, her chair flips up upside down and then smashes on the ground. And Christine, they've taken out of the house and put in the car. And she's terrified because she can still see the house shaking. Suddenly, bird slams into the car window, Allison, and it explodes, both the bird and the window. And Christine is screaming, covered in blood and broken glass.
Glass and dead bird.
Suddenly, dozens, if not hundreds of birds start swarming the house.
No.
I think in this case, birds are evil and are being summoned by the evil in the house. That's the only way I can explain what's going on. Bird style, like the movie The Birds.
Yes.
If we were to find out what happened, maybe somebody attempted an exorcism and that's what caused the birds to go insane. Who's to say?
We'll never know.
downstairs in the basement, Ed demands the demonic entity to show herself. And the sheet over Carolyn's face rips apart and is drenched in blood. And we see, like, it switches between Carolyn's bruised exorcism face and Bathsheba's, like, terrifying witch face.
Ghost witch face.
And they're screaming, and suddenly everything goes dead still. Oh, and Carolyn starts to levitate. And she starts laughing maniacally, and Roger screams at her, like, let her go, let my wife go. And Carolyn turns to him and says, she's already gone, and now you're all gonna die. Meanwhile, upstairs, Drew is searching for April, and he realizes that she is essentially in the wall again, or in the floor.
Oh, God.
Underneath the floorboards in the kitchen. So he's trying to rip up the floorboards to get to her while he's hearing her sob. And he calls down to everyone in the basement, I found April. She's underneath the kitchen. And in that moment, it distracts him enough that Carolyn is able to get herself free and grab the scissors and crawls into the wall. So now Carolyn, possessed by a witch, this witch ghost.
Nothing good happens in a wall.
Yes. So they're in a crawl space between the floors. So she's crawling in the wall. Ed is chasing after her. They can't stand fully up. And she's going to try to get April and murder her. As she's making her way through the wall, everybody's screaming and panicking. And finally, Lorraine runs out of the kitchen, and Drew has sort of hacked a hole in the floor. And she's calling to Carolyn, and she's like, I need you to fight her. I know that you're in there. I need you to remember, like, this is your family. And so Carolyn is able to, like, sort of start fighting Bathsheba. And Lorraine, like, reminds her of, like, that beautiful day at the beach. Like, remember your family. Oh. Remember how you don't want to murder all of them. You know,
yeah.
Like, you know, all the important things to remember when you're in a bad state. And so finally, Allison, it works. The power of Christ and having a gigantic family compels Carolyn, and she's able to fight off the influence of Bathsheba, and indicated by her violently vomiting. And she just vomits and vomits, and much like every time you vomit, when she's done, she feels a lot better.
Oh, I mean, nothing's ever been more true.
In the morning, they go, I guess they've called the cops. I don't, there's more people there, and I'm like, what? Again, it's like calling the cops on the birds. It's like, right. You want me to arrest a witch's
ghost
that is making you attack your children? But Carolyn, she's the worst for wear, but she looks okay. You know, like, she's made it through. Okay. She's no longer, the exorcism worked. Like, she did not murder any of her kids. And April hands Lorraine her locket, which had been, like, ripped off of her neck. And the Warrens arrive back home to see Judy and Nana, they get a voicemail from Father Gordon saying that the Vatican has approved the exorcism. Ed says, nice timing, huh? And they take the music box from their most recent adventure, and they put it in the occult museum. And we end on a little bit of text. This is a quote from Ed Warren. Diabolical forces are formidable. These forces are eternal, and they exist today. The fairy tale is true. The devil exists. God exists. And for us as people, our very destiny hinges upon which one we elect to follow. Ed Warren. The end.
I don't like that ending. Well, I don't like that text.
Let's go into it. What do you not like about that?
Religion.
And that's a lot of the big part of the Warrens. Well, it depends on how you look at it. It's a big part of the Warrens' belief system. It's also a big part of their grift.
Sure.
I feel like it makes them feel...
Yes, absolutely.
It puts these things into a context that people are able to understand.
Right. And, like, this is not me saying, like, religion is fake. Like, everybody, like, leave your own, you know, live your own whatever helps you get through life. But, like, to have the underpinning of their entire... scam also be based on something that isn't real or provable. Like, the existence of God is not provable. Therefore, you can argue the existence of, like, you know, Satan and demons and possession and stuff like that, because it's like nothing you're talking about is based in fact.
Yeah, it definitely puts them at a psychological advantage. And I just think, like, the people calling them up are people who really do need help, either because they are going through, like, you know, like they say, like, people who had exorcisms were mentally ill before we had the concept of mental illness.
Right.
Or they're having other issues that they are terrified of and need help with.
But yes.
These people are not giving them the kind of help that is real. But I guess for some people, maybe it would be helpful. Like, if you found this soothing.
Guiding but then principle.
It doesn't. Yeah. It's a complicated ruse to try to find any value in.
Yes.
But speaking of finding value in something, what are some fatal mistakes you think that people may have made in this movie?
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, Ed and Lorraine for doing what they do is already, like, I'm like, you're just inviting problems. Huge mistake. This family needed to get out of that house earlier.
Mm-hmm. By any means necessary.
Yes. And I would also, once things start going south, get every sharp object out of the house.
Yeah. I think that makes sense.
Like, not that, like, I think you could have ever stopped a demon from doing something, but, like, let's not give them the tools of violence, you know?
Yeah.
Like, get rid of scissors. Get rid of all the knives. Like, get...
It certainly would have helped.
Clear the house.
It would have made things more difficult.
Yes.
Keeping with that, I do think you pointed this out earlier, having the occult museum, having Annabelle in their house.
Yes.
And you could say, oh, well, in this case, Annabelle didn't get out herself. Bathsheba got her out. Well, it doesn't matter then because that's their job, is tangling with spirits and demons and ghosts.
Right. If she wasn't in the house, it doesn't matter who got her loose. She's in the house.
And that's maybe another issue I have with this whole franchise. It kind of plays fast and loose about the rules around certain things. Mm-hmm. So then it's hard to be like, oh, well, if you did this, it's like, well, if Annabelle was in a different house, I guess you could have gotten like a little leprechaun style car driven over and still try to kill them or something, you know?
Yes.
I feel like they're always, because it's more of an investigation, they're more focused mm-hmm. on that rather than the rules and regulations of a satisfying horror movie. Though I still enjoy The Conjuring. I think it's the best of this universe of the Conjuring expanded multiverse.
Yes.
But you know what I mean. Once we're like, oh, we're going to film the ghost. I'm like, okay, I guess.
Kramer on Instagram sent us an article that the house, the Conjuring house that this is all based on, is for sale for $1.2 million. So,
I mean, it's gorgeous.
Anybody has $1.2 million and wants a 14-room, 3,100-square-foot farmhouse in Rhode Island, you can do this.
I mean, I do want that, but I don't have... $1 million.
No, I don't have $1 million.
Yeah, and if you have 5 going on 6 kids, oh my God, 3,100 square feet?
That's
two
not
porches.
Enough.
It's also only 3 bedrooms, which seems like not that many for that square footage.
Yes.
If you buy this house, please let us know. It looks gorgeous.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Definitely tell us and then keep us updated on how many ghosts live there.
And then also let us know which of the other Annabelle or Conjuring movies you'd like us to do. There are a number of them. And of course, eventually we'll do all of them. Let's be realistic. We're never going to stop doing this. But I would like to prioritize the ones that people most want to hear about, whether that be Annabelle or I saw the most recent Conjuring movie, The Devil Made Me Do It. I'd be happy to do that one. Again, I have a problem with treating ghosts as like, you know, it's like Law and Order : Witch Ghost or whatever.
Yes.
But that's my problem, at least partially.
And then finally, I feel similarly.
Allison, where would you rank The Conjuring on the spooky scale?
A spooky scale.
I mean, it feels like horrific images. And again, like this, I think like even though it's like you guys should move, like this does fall into the bucket of like there's not a lot you can do to stop what's happening. So I think like a 7.
Okay.
I'm going to say a 7.
I'm going to give it a 5. I think that there are individual scares that are very well done and very unnerving. I will say, I think the Ed and Lorraine Warren make it much less scary to me because it's sort of saying like, oh, we have this unknowable, terrifying thing. Well, we know someone who knows everything, who could do the research, who's, mm-hmm. you know, it's like skilled. Then I'm like, okay, well then they're going to handle it. You know, like I trust that they're not going to let these kids be murdered or whatever.
Right.
Which I think is fun. And especially if you're someone where it's like, I like a horror movie, but I need it to be PG-13. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want a kid to die. I don't want to see anything horrible like that. Then this is the movie for you. I just think for me, I could have used an element of general danger, like genuinely like not knowing if something really horrible was going to happen.
Yes.
I excited to do the rest of the series.
Yes.
Starting off, I think, with the strongest of the bunch.
A big announcement. We are doing another live show.
We'll do it live.
Well, fuck it. We'll do it live, which we're going to on October 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern time. And we're going to ruin Malignant.
Which is the most. So this was James Wan's film, The Conjuring. And Malignant is James Wan's most recent movie. Having seen it, it's on HBO Max. If you're someone who does watch the movies, please immediately watch it so you'll be prepared. If not, read nothing about it.
Yes, come in cold.
It's something where it's like, having seen it, I'm excited to see it again. If you don't know anything about it, don't read about it at this point, because then you will get to enjoy, as Allison gets to enjoy, each tiny twist.
Yes.
And if you're somewhere in between, that's fine too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We're all welcome. And this one, I will say, I think James Wan said, this one's for me, when he made Malignant, and that's what's exciting about it.
Oh, boy. So we'll be sharing the link, but make sure to get your tickets. You'll be able to watch it for 72 hours after, just like our last show, which was so much fun. Momenthouse.com/ruined is where you can go, and we'll be posting that all over our social. So please get those tickets and keep leaving us spooky 5-star reviews, because we'll keep reading them on the podcast. So that's it. That's all I got.
We can't wait. We're going to actually make a drink that will be palatable this time.
Yes,
we've already picked one out. So you're going to be in a much better place than we were this. And hopefully, I mean, barring any disaster, I won't have moved during the exact same day we were doing the live show. So things are only looking up. And we look forward to seeing you guys there.
Yes. So get your tickets. And until next week.
Please.
You got to keep it spooky.
Bye.
Bye. Ruined is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder. Recorded and edited by Kat Iosa.
Emmy award-winning John Mulaney presents Everybody's in L.A., a special run of 6 live episodes created by and starring Mulaney that'll stream live on Netflix during the Netflix is a Joke Fest. The comically unconventional show will feature special guests where John Mulaney explores the city of Los Angeles during a week when every funny person is in it. Watch John Mulaney Presents Everybody's in L.A., debuting May 3rd live at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, only on Netflix.